we were. We ended with a discussion of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's incredible essay on Emuna, that the greatest source of faith is faith itself, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is our personal encounters with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be them through Talmud Torah, or Tefillah, or nature. And obviously that on a practical level, this demands of us that we seek activities that promote faith. And that's especially true for someone who already believes but seeks to deepen their emuna. So if you have the sheets, again, this is not the sheets from last week or the week before, I think, but from 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the sheet with the quotes from Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein then addresses an important question, which is that one can question the validity of these experiences. It's true. Sometimes a person has... Just leave them here. Sometimes a person does experience a very powerful feeling of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but maybe these feelings are just triggered by neurons in the brain that respond to certain stimuli. How do we know to trust them? How do we know that we're not delusional? So Rav Lichtenstein writes, at the level of rational demonstration, this is, of course, patently circular. I hold no brief for Anselm's ontological proof, and I recognized the theoretical possibility of self-delusion long before I had ever heard of Feuerbach. I still haven't heard of Feuerbach. Existentially, however, nothing has been more authentic than the encounter with our Father, our King, the source and ground of all being. Nothing more sustaining, nothing more strengthening, nothing more vivifying. So essentially what he's saying is an answer that's twofold. Number one is at a certain point in time, we have to trust our gut. We do so for every other decision in our life. When something feels authentic, we trust that authenticity. And especially when it comes to the feelings of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which are oftentimes more powerful than the other feeling. We talked about last week, I think, the epistemological consistency or inconsistency when someone says, I don't believe unless it's proven in a strictly logical way. And the second thing that Rav Lichtenstein stresses is that these experiences contribute to belief, but they're not its only foundation. And these powerful emotions join with other factors to help us trust in God. Now, last week during this year, I think someone raised another objection, which is that practicers of other religions also experience these sorts of numinous sensations. Idolaters, I would imagine, even experience powerful, transcendent religious experiences, and yet we know, of course, that that's false. So does that indicate, or should that indicate, that we shouldn't trust these feelings? So this is an interesting question. The truth is, to more fully address this, we would have to consider the Torah's perspective on other religions, and it's actually not so simple. But very briefly, I'll say three things. Number one, the objection would be more troubling if one's faith was entirely based upon these inexpressible feelings. However, as we've seen, the Torah insists that our faith also be rooted in the intellect. The logos portion of Judaism is so persuasive that it bolsters these feelings to be legitimate. And that's not true for any other religion. the emotions that an Oved Avodah Zarah might feel have an aspect of truth to them, in the sense that they're drawn to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're just misguided in the way that they apply those feelings. And a person is capable of using their intellect to appreciate the falseness of Avodah Zarah and redirect their sentiments towards the true God. So the feelings aren't necessarily utterly false, and this objection would be much more cogent if that's all that we were dealing with. Consider the following mashal. When a person is considering the suitability of a particular spouse, so obviously the intangible emotions and attraction play a role. However, the intelligent individual makes sure that there are also rational reasons behind their choice. Feelings alone are insufficient reason to marry someone. And the same thing holds true with our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even if our emotional attachment defines our bond to the Creator, it's anchored in beliefs and in rational thoughts that go well beyond these feelings. That's point one. Point two is that the notion that we don't have to entirely reject the religious feelings experienced by a non-Jew. Torah Judaism is not the only correct way for a human being to serve God. The reason why, or one reason why, we're not meant to proselytize is because non-Jews can appropriately serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through their own means, and they need not convert to Judaism in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if a numinous experience overwhelms a non-Jew, and that experience drives them to serve God in their own way, so that can be legitimate, that could be entirely authentic, as long as, of course, it doesn't violate the Sheva Mitzvos Nei Noach, it doesn't violate Avodah Zarah. If they do, if that numinous experience draws them to violate Avodah Zarah, so then it's not only false, but it's destructive. There's a very powerful essay in Derech HaTchiyah by Rav Kook, where he talks about the grave dangers of raw spirituality that's unrestrained by the intellect. And he sees that's largely what Avodah Zarah is about. There's another interesting related topic, maybe at the end of this year, if there is time. We could talk about it. Fascinating comments I saw recently in the Abarbanel about Tinoch Shenishba with respect to non-Jews serving idolatry. If you have a chance, we'll get back to it. I'll tell you two other Marmakomos to consider on this topic, which I don't want to stress. I don't want to, you know, we could devote a whole year to the topic of non-Jews' religious experiences, but just two other Marmakomos to consider. One is Rav Soloveitchik's famous essay, Confrontation, where he writes that the reason why interfaith dialogue is absurd is because religious experiences don't lend themselves to universalization. Or in his words, the word of faith reflects the intimate, private, and paradoxically inexpressible cravings of the individual for and his linking up with his maker. It reflects the numinous character and the strangeness of the act of faith of a particular community, which is totally inexpressible to the man of a different faith community. Meaning to say, it's not necessarily that each faith community has their own correct way to serve their Creator and to talk to each other, now, again, presumably assuming it's not Avodah Zarah, and to talk to each other about the different experiences is absurd in his words, because it's not subject to universalization. It's particular. And the second Marmakom is that essay that I just mentioned by Rav Kook. It's called Derech HaTchiyah, where he talks about the nature and the value of spirituality in paganism. He talks about this in a number of places, also in Shmona Ketzavim and Talalei Oros, and other places. Okay, so just returning back to our main discussion. So clearly what emerges from what we're saying, the experiential aspect of Emunah, is that faith is personal. Unlike the philosophical proofs that we described in the writings of the Rambam and the like, which are arguments that can work for everybody, the types of arguments or reasons or basis of belief that we're discussing now is something that can be very powerful for one person and leave somebody else entirely unconvinced. I find that when talking to people who are struggling with Emunah, so besides the types of arguments, the rational, logical arguments that we were discussing 2-3 weeks ago, it's also valuable to, though sometimes difficult, to express your own personal feelings, or in my case, my own personal feelings in terms of what inspires me. And it's hard to talk about that. It's hard to think about it. But I think sometimes it's important to be able to express that. So for me, for example, Talmud Torah is something that's incredibly powerful. And I can't say it's true every time I learn, but often, or occasionally at the very least, when learning, one's really overwhelmed by the profundity, by the brilliance, by the truth in Torah. It's clear that this is something that's much bigger, much greater than anything human. And that beauty, that overwhelming feeling of godliness is something that, in a sense, is often much more powerful than any philosophical or scientific argument. That's something that doesn't necessarily speak to people who haven't been zocha to be Yoshvei Beis HaMedrash. But I guess four other additional factors that I found to be very inspiring. The first is simply by examining the providence in my own life. The fact that I'm here, married to the person that I'm married, teaching where I am, and so many other things. And now's not the time to elaborate, but there's so many things in my own life, incredible gifts that totally unexpected, unpredictable. It's true for the hashkacha and big things in one's life, and also the little things in one's life. The fact that you can't find your keys when you're looking and looking, and then you stop and you daven for a second, and you know the next second you find them. The hashkacha we experience in our own life is something that is a very powerful reminder of the extent to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to our tefillos. A number two, and I find this particularly powerful, is consideration of the moral perfection that I've seen in my Rebbeim. When you look at people who are great in Torah, and you see in them qualities that are absolutely incredible, absolute altruism, people who have anava and truly care about others, and that speaks to the unmistakable truth and divinity in Torah, that Torah is able to and capable of producing such midos. Number three, contemplation about the complexity of the human body, the astonishing story of the Jewish people, studying biology, physics, history, all give us a glimpse of God's power, his inscrutability, his involvement in the world. And whether that's through reading books or looking at nature is something that is very, very powerful. And finally, encounters with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in prayer and song, watching my children play or reading them a book. These experiences are things that can remind a person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly watching us and guiding us and protecting us. Now again, obviously, some of these arguments are going to resonate with some people and not with others. So all you could do is really talk about your own personal experiences. But I think that doing that is something that is very, very helpful, both in terms of strengthening our own emuna and also being able to help others who may be struggling. Another question that was asked last week, I don't remember if this was during class or after class, was what does emuna pshuta mean? What is emuna pshuta? It's a phrase we've all heard. What exactly does it mean? So I don't know if I can give a complete answer, but I had a couple of thoughts, and if you take a quick look at the sources from today, we'll begin with two pieces from the Alter Rebbe. I think that emuna pshuta, which is oftentimes translated perhaps as simple faith, doesn't necessarily mean faith that's simplistic as much as it's faith that's available to those who are simple. Meaning to say, you don't need to study philosophy, you don't need to study Kabbalah. The way that I think the Alter Rebbe puts it is very powerful. When it comes to understanding God, so in a sense, the more we try to understand him, the more we're bringing him down to our level of cognition. When, in fact, in reality, he's really totally beyond comprehension. And therefore, in a certain sense, the simple person's faith, the simple person's conception of God is more true than someone sophisticated. Because someone who approaches the world always trying to understand everything that they see, and even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to apply their limited intellect to God's limitless existence. They're going to, as it were, box him in, bring him down to their level. And in doing so, then they are limiting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when we talk about emuna pshuta, we're not just talking about, though it certainly includes this, the idea of emuna in the sense of simple faith without seeking proof, without needing evidence, the faith that's rooted in the type of deep experiential awareness that we've been discussing until now. But it's also rooted in the understanding, in the appreciation that we can't ever possibly understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take a look at at least some of these two sources. Hine Yisrael hei ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim v'Hashem echad b'emuna pshuta b'li shem tam v'das ha'musag v'amuvan alma v'lama v'eich v'chulei u'ma shenil u'chach me'amechkar b'sifreihem ha'filosofim v'katzar matza sechleihem l'asig efes katzeu achad minei alef alfei alafim v'chulei Yisod Pashut V'Klal Munach Kavua B'Lev Kol Yisrael Mibes Yisrael Mikarev V'Lev Amok Ki Yaseh Shelo Tamot B'Amunah Kavua V'Chazaka V'Afilu Kol Aluchos Sheba'Olam Ein Mezizim Osa. And in Tanya, he writes, we'll read from where it's bolded, V'Zeh Lashon Chachma Koach Ma Shehu Ma She'eno Musa Gumuvan V'Eno Nitfas B'Hasaga Dayan V'Lachein Mislabesh Ba Or Ein Sof Baruch Hu D'Les Machshava Tfisa Be'Klal V'Lachein Kol Yisrael Afilu Hanashim V'Amei Haaretz Heim Aminim B'Hashem Sheha'emuna Hi Lemala Min Hadas. That's what Emunah Pshuta is. Emunah is Lemala Min Hadas because Das is limited. It's Lemala Min Hadas V'Hasaga Ki Pesi Yamin L'Chol Davar V'Arum Yavin V'Gomer U'Lgabe Kodesh Baruch Hu Shu Lemala Min Haseichel V'Hadas V'Les Machshav Atfisa Be'Klal HaKol Kipsiya Metzla Kodesh Baruch Hu. Meaning to say, we have to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a Pesi. And if we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the perspective of, this is something I'm going to be able to understand, I'm going to use my tools of the intellect, so then you're a fool. you're limiting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're bringing him down to your own level, and it's going to end up being utterly false. So, Emunah Pshuta is not, again, it is the idea that our emunah is pashut, it doesn't need proof, it doesn't need evidence, but it's also the recognition and the awareness that what we believe in is something we can't understand by definition. It's beyond us. There's a beautiful saying that's attributed to Rav Naftali of Ravshitz, that tamimus is, you have it here in Hebrew, it's in Yiddish in the original, but tamimus is greater than chachma. But you have to be a great chacham to be a tamim. Meaning to say, and this is a very powerful point, someone with the philosophical, or we'll say it the other way, someone with lacking the philosophical outlook has a certain advantage when it comes to faith. Because the simpleton, perhaps because he lacks the inclination to figure the world out from a scientific or philosophical perspective, his attitude is that things are true because they're true. They don't have to be proven. So such a person, in a sense, has an advantage with respect to Emunah. But he's saying something even more teeth, right? A lot of times, the word tam, or tamimus, tam, can mean two things. It could mean a simpleton in the sense of someone who's foolish, but it could also refer to someone who's highly intelligent, but realizes the truth and beauty and simplicity. And that's what he's saying. You have to be a Greis HaChacham to be a Tamim, right? Tamimus isn't just because you're not educated. You didn't study philosophy. And that's very important. Now, even though we saw, for example, what the Alter Rebbe was writing about how a person has to be absolutely aware and cognizant of their lack of ability to possibly understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the same time, that doesn't potter a person from devoting their lives to trying to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take a look at the next piece, which is from the Kuntres Acharon. Yedias HaMetzius Mei HaShtalshalos Hi Gam Kein Mitzvah Rabba V'Nesah V'Adirabba Olal Kulana, right? So the understanding, the mitzvah to understand the HaShtalshalos, to study Kabbalah and understand the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the extent that we can, that is the most important mitzvah. Olal Kulana etc. And that's something that we need to strive to do. I'd like to turn for a moment, also because a number of people brought this up, on the very, very famous quote from Rav Soloveitchik, quoting a non-Jew. So that brings us back to our discussion of the, I guess, idea, the possibility that the powerful religious experiences of non-Jews may also be valid. So Rav Soloveitchik, talk a little bit about the Rav on Emunah. If you look over here, this is from the Halachic Mind. And here Rav Soloveitchik is expressing the weakness of philosophical proofs for the existence of God. The problem of evidence in religion will never be solved. The believer does not miss philosophic legitimization. The skeptic will never be satisfied with any cognitive demonstration. In other words, all these proofs are oftentimes silly because the person who already is a maimon doesn't need it, doesn't help him. And the person who's a skeptic, these types of arguments will never work anyway. In some cases, homoreligiosus is so overwhelmed by the import of his experience that he very distinctly perceives the reality of his object. He is fully conscious of the existence of the transcendental order. Regarding that first point, the Rav, at least on two occasions, quotes, both in Lonely Man of Faith and in Uvikashta Misham, you have over here, an idea that really, I think, expresses the idea of the Kuzari. Despite the loving bride in the, does the loving bride in the embrace of her beloved ask for proof that he is alive and real? Must the prayerful soul clinging in passionate love and ecstasy to her beloved demonstrate that he exists? So asked Soren Kierkegaard sarcastically when told that Anselm of Canterbury, the father of the very abstract and complex ontological proof, spent many days in prayer and supplication that he be presented with rational evidence for the existence of God. Now, that's not to say that there's no value in looking to the world, whether it's philosophy or nature, to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all know Rambam's very, very powerful description in Yisodei HaTorah, Ketzad Yaderech Lavasu V'Yiraso. And it's, of course, important to recognize that's not dispassionate, rational speculation. It's very, very powerful. And this is true, the Rav writes, even with respect to the proofs that Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim. Maimonides' position in the guide is that the dynamics of the world lead to the idea that there is a God, but this does not have the status of demonstrative proof. Does God does not serve as a theoretical explanation of the cosmos. Rather, my apprehension of God follows immediately, not indirectly, from my apprehension of the cosmos. What's fascinating about this line, by the way, is that's obviously the case, you know, when it comes to his description as in the Yisodei HaTorah, right? Miyad hu oev. But he's saying this even with respect to the types of proofs in the Mor Nevuchim. And this is a very important idea, one which we'll not discuss today. But, you know, people think of Mor Nevuchim as this dry philosophical treatise. It's not. It's full of fire and passion. And when the Rambam describes how a person who studies philosophy comes close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's an experience that's one that's full of powerful emotions. He's overwhelmed. It's not like this bookish activity that's dispassionate. It's full of passion and fire. And And I think that's something that's important to recognize. Maybe we'll get back to some of these points from the Rav, especially from Uvikashta Misham. But I want to add another important kinach, I think, that relates to especially the approach that we discussed last week from the Kuzari. And that is the following. If a person, two people can, you know, debate endlessly whether a giant metal box could fly, but if they go outside and they see a 747 take off, so there's no more room for discussion. And if a person, if their belief is rooted in, again, in science and arguments and logic, so you could have arguments back and forth, but when you feel it, so then all the questions that you can't answer are questions that can't be answered, but they're not pirchas. And that's the difference. You know, you see the 747 take off. You could wonder, that's really strange. It weighs a lot, right? But lemaisa, it's happening. So when one's faith is something like described in the Kuzari, so you might have questions. Doesn't necessarily answer every question, but the questions are questions, and you'll think about them, and you'll work on them, and you might not have answers, and you don't have to feel a need to offer apologetic and difficult answers, but the questions still don't shake your faith because you see the plane flying. And I think this is especially true with respect to the problem of evil and seeing injustice. The Ramban writes, over here you have it on page 2, second source, with respect to the problem of evil. This is in his Hakdama to Sefer Iyo. V'yesh davar mach'iv halvavos u'mad'iv ha'machshavos, mimenu levado nimshechu kol hadoros l'kfira ha'gmura, v'hu hera'os ba'olam mishpat me'ukal v'tzadik v'ra'lo v'rasha v'tovlo. Ze shoresh ha'meri b'chol ha'mordim mikol uma v'lashon. That's a very powerful statement. The primary reason that brings people to deny God or deny his providence is seeing the righteous suffer. That's something that pains the heart, distresses the mind. And that's more likely to bring a person to kfira than any of the questions from science and the age of the universe and the dinosaurs and whoever, whatever other questions that people have. And the fact that it's not just a philosophical quandary or a scientific enigma, but it's a visceral response to seeing injustice. So the fact that it's an emotional problem demands an emotional response much more than an intellectual response. And again, a person has to be able to respond to the problem of evil in an intellectual way as well. I think 2 or 3 years ago in the Machshava classes on Friday, we spent several shiurim discussing different intellectual approaches and responses to the problem. And there are many. The Rambam deals with it extensively in Mor Nevuchim, as do many other thinkers. Ramban in Sefer Iyov, and especially in Shaar HaGmul. But coming from where we're coming from the approach of the Kuzari and the like, so it's really a very different type of answer. I think First of all, we have to keep in mind a point that the Ramban himself stresses in the Shaar HaGemor, which is that even those who are closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu struggle with this. The Ramban notes how Yirmiyahu, Habakkuk, Koheles, all of our greatest Nevi'im struggled with the problem of evil. And the fact that they knew about divine justice, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told Moshe Rabbeinu, Tzadik Sheino Gamor, Rasha Sheino Gamor, answered the question, didn't stop the Nevi'im from crying out, Lama Derech Rishayim Salecha. And it's important to remember that faith doesn't guarantee tranquility. A person could be a maimon and still have to struggle and wrestle with this issue. Take a look at how the Rav puts this. This is from Halachic Man, the next source. And that which appears in the sermons of these creatures is in a primitive, garbled form, at times interwoven with childish naivete and superficial belief, is refined and purified in the furnace of popular philosophy and theology and becomes transformed into a universal religious ideology which proclaims, if you wish to acquire tranquility without paying the price of spiritual agonies, turn unto religion. Agav, this very much relates to Parshas HaShavua. The Rav powerfully writes about the Akedah in these very terms. Don't think that the Akedah was easy. Don't think that Avram slept calmly and peacefully the night before he was about to slaughter his son. Don't think that religion is meant to solve you of a bellyache. If you wish to achieve a fine psychic equilibrium without having to first undergo a slow, gradual personal development, turn on to religion. That's what these people say. And if you, right, religion will make you happy, you'll sleep well at night, you'll feel good, have a fulfilled, meaningful life. It's easy, it's fun. And if you wish to achieve instant spiritual wholeness and simplicity that needs to be forged out of the struggle and torments of consciousness, turn onto religion. This ideology is intrinsically false and deceptive. That religious consciousness in man's experience, which is most profound and most elevated, which penetrates to the very depths and ascends to the very heights, is not that simple and comfortable. On the contrary, it is exceptionally complex, rigorous, and tortuous. Where you find its complexity, there you find its greatness. When you try to shield yourself from the vicissitudes of a struggle, you try to avoid anything dark, then you deny the possibility of redemption. Because if you can't appreciate the darkness, then you will not appreciate the illumination when it finally arrives. Doesn't mean you have to unnecessarily make yourself crazy. And if you're happy, you know, that could be good. And of course, there are drachim, different drachim in Avodas Hashem. But like we see in these psukim, when you read about Yirmiyahu and his internal struggles with the suffering of the righteous and the prosperity of the wicked, we see that the struggle is okay. And from the struggle will emerge redemption. But we don't have to deny the struggle. And I think perhaps a very powerful way, we're not going to learn all of Sefer Iyov, but a powerful way to see this is maybe just to examine one kapitel in Tehillim, which highlights this point, Ayin Gimel. Like any sensitive soul, Asaph, struggles with the seeming injustice in the world. And his emotional turmoil was so powerful that he writes, my feet almost slipped. Look at Pasuk Beis, Vani Kim'at Natayu Raglai Ke'ayin Shufchu Ashurai. Why? Ki Kinesi B'Hololim Shalom Rishayim Er'eh. I would see the tranquility of the wicked, and I struggled with it. I almost lost my grip. The prideful people, he continues to describe, who steal from the innocent and consume the bounty of the poor, whose eyes bulge with fatness, who don't worry about retribution. Look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, Amru Eicha Yadakel, V'yesh Deya Be'Elyon. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't know. And seemingly they're right. Look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'ahi Nagua Kol Hayom, V'tochachti Labkarim. I was plagued with this problem all of my days. This is the powerful description of someone struggling with an issue. So how is it that Asaf resolves his crisis of faith? What does he do? Look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ad avo el mikdashi kel avina l'acharisam. He went to the Beis HaMikdash. And he considered their end. He looked at the bigger picture. How does going to the Beis HaMikdash solve all his problems? That's what he writes. I was struggling. I was losing my foothold. Ad avo al mikdashi kel. I don't think what it means is that he went to the Beis HaMikdash and he all of a sudden understood the question of why the righteous suffer and why the wicked prosper. He had an answer to his question. I don't know if that's the pshat. The pshat is that he went to the Beis HaMikdash and he embraced his lover. And when you do that, the questions don't trigger doubts. Doesn't mean he had the answer of every question. But his perspective changes. And this is an idea that you see again and again in Sefer Tillim. Take a look at the next one. Say this in Benching. Nar ha'isi gam zakanti velo ra'isi tzadik ne'azav v'zaru mevakesh lachem. Ever think about what an absurd thing to say that is? I was once eating at a Yekke's house, so they asked me to lead the benching, and they said we say the whole benching out loud, but we say that pasuk quietly, because imagine there's someone who's hungry, he's going to feel pretty bad. Oh, Ra'isi Tzadik Nazav. Oh, you must be a Rasha if you're hungry. Right? How? So much of David, of Sefer Tillim is about David's describing his own suffering. How does he say, V'lo Ra'isi Tzadik Nazav? Answer is, like Asaf said, Adavo al mikdashi kel avina l'acharisam. David understood the bigger picture, avina l'acharisam. And when we remember, when we look at the bigger picture, we understand that in fact it is true. Lo ra'isi tzadik ne'azav, v'zaru mevakesh lachem. We might see things that go against, that contradict what we know to be true. But the Maimon is able to, because of the power of his relationship, to understand that taka takasha, but it's an aberration. It's not a pircha. It's part of the bigger picture. There is justice. There is emes. There's actually a beautiful kenach that the Malbim says on that pasuk that highlights this. The next source, Nara Yisi Gam Zakanti Uvachanti Toldos Hayamim.
V'lo ra'isi she'i atzadik ne'azav ad shezaro yiyah mevakesh lachem.
Yeah, it's true. There are times that the tzaddik is going to be hungry, he's going to be in pain, he's going to be despised, but it's not going to go on to the point that Zaru mevakesh lachem. Ki lo yazov liolam, v'im lo hitzliachu, yatzlichu banav. Ki ra'isi es atzadik asher kol ayom choneinu malveh ad shenase ani al yidei kein. B'chol zo zaru lebracha, that's the next pasuk. Zaru lebracha v'tashuv ha'atzlacha b'yad banav, v'tzidkas aviyem tia levracha levanav. Right? Ad avo el mikdashi kel avina la'acharisam. I see the end. I see. Whether avina la'acharisam means olam haba, avina la'acharisam means generations, avina la'acharisam means the big picture, but that's the answer. Again, Yiru es Hashem kedoshav ki ein machzor li reyav kefirim rashu v'rayivu v'darshe Hashem lo yachzeru kol tov. Kol tov, that's also, you can't say that out loud, right? In benching. Darshe Hashem lo yachzeru kol tov. David HaMelech, he was a Darish Hashem. He had his share of tzaris. So where did he come up with that crazy idea that Darshi Hashem lo yachzeru kol tov? So look at the Radak, the bottom of the page. Ki ein machzor l'reyav, v'amar zeh l'fish uaya gola bein haplishtim, v'ein lo sham yodim u'makirim oso, shiitnu lo lechem lechol, l'fish yarias Hashem lo chasar tarfo. Right? This story, David HaMelech came to this realization running away from the Plishtim. B'shano so es tamo, b'fnei Avimelech, v'igarsheu v'ayilach. He was drooling spit. He was acting as though he was mad to save his life. And a stranger gave him a piece of bread. And he lived. And he concludes, k'firim rashu v'ra'ivu, b'darshi Hashem el yachzeru chol tov. And I think that's the approach that David HaMelech, that Asaf, is telling us in terms of how to deal with the problem of evil. It's not just about answering philosophical questions, but it's about the deeper faith that allows a person to have faith despite seeing questions. And that's true for any type of questions. It's true for questions like tzaddik v'ralo rasha v'tov lo, and it's true with philosophical questions and scientific questions. It's not to say we shouldn't look for answers. Of course, we should look for answers. But we have to, but the questions are very different when they're approached from the perspective of faith, of belief. Okay, so that, I told you, there are two more things we want to do. And this is, again, this is the Shirayim from the Emunah discussion, though we could spend the rest of his man on this as well. But next time we're going to go on to the next topic, though. Actually, Rabbi Rothwax told me we don't have class next week. So I guess we're going to pick up in 2 weeks. I'll take some questions, and I told you then I would, I want to go back to the Rav on Uvikashta Misham and Avar Benel on Tinok Shenishba with respect to Avodah Zarah for non-Jews. Yes?
So I actually have two questions, but I
don't know if you could ask both. I don't know if I'll answer any.
So does the Amunah Peshuta kind of go against like this whole footnote from Halachic Man and things like that? It seems that
not at all.
Not accepting, but believing in God simply. And Halachic Man is saying, but it needs to come through spiritual torment in order to achieve redemption.
I don't see any stira with that. The Emuna Pshuta that's described by Asaf includes the struggle and Yirmiyahu and the like. It's, if anything, Adiraba. Now again, for some people, Emuna Pshuta is such that they have no struggle. But I don't believe that that's what it has to mean. And I think that's exactly what the Rav here is describing. I mentioned before the Rav's description of the struggle and torment that Avraham Avinu went through on his way to the Akedah. Again, not a struggle of should I do it or not, but a much more deep struggle, like what's going to be with my Hamshech and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises and the like. It was a struggle. It was something that causes them to lose sleep. So your question reminds me of a shir I once heard in which the person giving the shir compared those statements of the Rav to something Rav Kook wrote, in which he described how surely Avraham Avinu went to sleep the night before the Akedah, and he slept a peaceful slumber, confident in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed and rachamim, and so who's right? Machlokes between the Rav and Rav Kook. I don't think that's the takeaway. I think the point is that you don't have to deny, that the maimon doesn't have to deny himself that struggle. If a person is able to see a child suffering with leukemia and then sleep well that night, it doesn't mean that there's a problem with them, and it doesn't mean that there's not a problem with them. Something you have to think about. But that's the point that I think that I was trying to stress about Emuna Pshuta. Emuna Pshuta doesn't mean simple in the sense of, it's shayach to someone who's simple, but I don't think it's you don't need to be a philosopher to have Emuna Pshuta. It doesn't mean it's not very deep and profound, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there's necessarily going to be a life devoid of all struggle.
So, somewhat related. It seems kind of popular that nowadays people kind of say that, like, oh, everything's really good, it's just obviously bad things happen, okay, but it's not really bad, you know, God has a plan for all this. But doesn't that really, and I'm not denying that, but doesn't that kind of take away from this? I mean, you're supposed to see the bad things and see that it's supposed to affect you.
It's a very good question, and Ravon Lapiansky once told me that in 1 week he had to pay a shiva call to two people who lost a child. It's a very hard thing to do. The first one he went to was a younger man who, it was the whole time he was talking about how it was for the good, and we believe everything, Gamzu L'tova, and Kol Ma'ad Avid Rachman L'tav Avid, and we have Emunah, and this is making us stronger in Emunah, and the like. And then he went to Rav Moshe Shapiro, who's also sitting Shiva for a child. And he was Tzibrachan, Mamish Tzibrachan. So I think the point that's important to remember is that a person who does struggle with this, it doesn't mean they're not a maimon. And emunah and religion isn't demanding of us to deny those emotions. And to be a good Jew doesn't, mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid, but But it doesn't mean that at times there won't be a struggle, and different people have different struggles. But again, what I think what the Rav was stressing is a very important point. And like you said, especially in today's day and age, when oftentimes religion is marketed as the... And it is... I don't want to go too much in the other direction. It is true that the life of a maimon is one of tremendous fulfillment and happiness. Look at how the Chovos Halvavos, how he describes how the person who has bitachon will not be plagued by all sorts of things that the person who doesn't. When a person is suffering, but they recognize that it's not pointless, and it serves a purpose, and there's a reason behind it. So that changes everything. So, but at the same time, the person the religious person who does struggle, who does wrestle with this, they're not doing anything wrong, and on the contrary, that the gedolim throughout the ages had that same struggle. Yes.
So that the point that we made that goyim also have sort of their ways of connecting to God, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons why you don't go try to be a guy or people, is that at all related to the fact that shittuf might be more for goyim?
Maybe. I mean, the halachos of avodah zarah are more for guy, are not necessarily the same as for a Jew, and that might be one example, and that might reflect it. It's also important to remember in that discussion that a lot of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, both for Jews and even Goyim, is, if you look at how the Rambam presents it, especially, let's say, Perek Beis and Hilchos Avodah Zarah, is a gzeira of sorts. In other words, and that's why serving intermediaries, even when you believe in God, constitutes Avodah Zarah. But yes, perhaps. Okay, so I told two things, whatever time we have left. How much time do we have left? 3 minutes. So number one is with respect to Avodah Zarah for idolaters. First of all, it's important to recognize with the respect to the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach that these are things that a person, every human being, is capable of knowing. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, what we're learning, Tzadi Beis Amid Aleph, Mikan Leben Noach Shenarag, Shehaya Lo Lilmod Velo Lamad. The Rambam writes that even though a non-Jew is not executed for violating the Sheva Mitzvos B'Shogeg, violating them because of ignorance is considered a form of negligence, and they are Chayv Misa. Ben Noach sheshagag ba'achas mitzvosav pater miklum ba'medvam emor b'shagag ba'achas mitzvosav avir below kavana kigon shebal eishes chaver v'dima shehi ishta upnuya avalim yada shueishes chaver v'lo yada shehi asura alav ela alav libo shedavar zem muter lo v'chein im heart right so then hareza karv lemezid v'nerag v'lo techashiv lo lahem shkaga. Like the Gemara says, "Mipnei shaya lahem lo mod, the lo lamad." When it comes to the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the Rambam writes in a number of places, including Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph, and Hilchos Malachim, that even though we know these from a Mesorah, the Hadas nota lahen. In other words, these are things that could be independently discovered. There's the famous discussion about the Rambam's distinction between Chasidei Umos HaOlam and Chachmei Umos HaOlam. Chachmei Umos HaOlam are Gaim that do the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach because they independently discovered them, as opposed to the Chasidei Umos HaOlam who do it because Hashem commanded. Rav Kook has an interesting discussion. Who's at a higher Madrega? The Chasid or the Chacham? Sometimes you think Chasid, he writes, but in the Torah of the Rambam, the Chacham might be better. So that's an interesting question. But all that being said, there's a very interesting pasuk in Dvarim, Veschanan,
So this is a very problematic pasuk. What does it mean? Asher chalak Hashem elokecha osam l'chol ha'amim. Does this imply that goyim are correct in doing avodah zarah? Certainly not. So there are a number of ways to understand this pasuk. We don't have time to read the standard approaches. Take a look at the Mikros Gedolos, you'll see. But there's a fascinating comment by the Abarbanel in Yonah Parak Dalet. The Abarbanel is talking about Yonah's comments, Hashem's comments to Yonah, why he didn't destroy the city of Nineveh, or why it would have been bad to, the great city with more than 120,000 people, that Asher lo yada ben yaminam l'smolam. They don't know how to discern between their right and their left. So what does that mean? What does that mean? So the Barbanel writes the following. It's really a very fascinating idea, and there's not time to fully address it, but it's an important point considering our discussion before. Yada beni mino l'smolo, amar zel tinokos k'tivri ha'mefarshim, it's not going on the children. Aval amar, he explains why. Aval amar ze al anshe ninve kulam, shahayu betoch ha'ir, harbe mishtemasar ribo, adam, mivali torah, v'lachein, benin avodizara lo yadu ben yaminam l'smolam. Vehem ke behem araba. That's how he understands the end of the pasuk. And he says later on, v'im tomar shem avodim avodizara, v'shalau shavu mimenu, hinehem kedmus basar bali chayim bilti medabrim, ki acharei she'en lan torah v'lo nitzdavu ba, v'chalak Hashem tzva shamayim l'chol ha'amim, u'mepnei ze, en ra'u ish ya'ansho aleha. Right, so he quotes his pasuk in Dvarim. Now, again, he's not saying it's right. It's right. But there's a certain tolerance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Gayim, who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, when it is true that lo yada ben yamino l'smolo. And that's why you'll find generally in Tanakh that Gayim are punished not for Avodah Zarah, but for moral lapses. Just look at this week's Parsha, the destruction of Sodom, or the destruction of the world at the time of Noah. It wasn't because they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, though they certainly were, but it was because of their immorality, their chesed, their lack of chesed, and the like. So I guess it's one interesting marmakom to consider also when considering this point. All right, much more to say, but new topic, new sugya in 2 weeks. Have a good Shabbos.